Morning. Today's daf and Baba Basra Sadi Test. We are on the very bottom of Sadi Chesamad Beis. We talked yesterday about annexations to a house. You hire a contractor. You tell him you want a little house to the side. Your son just getting married, and you'd like him to move in with his new wife, and so you need a little new space. So you tell the contractor to put a room next to the outside of the house, and outside of that, you didn't give much more instructions than that. You're pretty comfortable with his general decision making. So how big should it be? So that's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. It's got to be 4x6, right? Nice size annex for the new chassan and kala. So 4x6, we're talking about something like 8x12 feet. Okay, good. Enjoy your new. That's right. And then the Gemara goes on to describe that if you want to make something really big, like a larger house, so it's 8x10, 8x10 amas, right? 16x20, or trochlin if you're going to make a palace, so it's going to be 10x10 amas. It's going to be about 20x20 feet. Okay, that's a palace. How about the height? What's the expectation in terms of the height? So the Mishnah gives us a formula: take the length plus the width of the area, and then divide that by 2, and that's going to get you the general height. And how do we know that? So the Gemara says we know that because of the Heichal. Because if you look at the building of Bayis Rishon that was built by Shlomo HaMelech, so you'll know that it's 20 by 40. 20 by 40 is 60, meaning that's the length and the width, it's 60. And then take that number divided by 2, so that's 30. And it happens to be that the height of the Beis HaMikdash was 30 amos. So so that's how we arrive at the general understanding generally speaking, when you're constructing for somebody, so the height should be half of the length plus the width. Adkan, that's the mission that we learned yesterday. We learned a little bit of Gemara as well. We're on the very bottom of Tzadi Chesamud Beis, and we're starting today with Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina Nafek Lekriyasi goes out to the villages. Ramalei Krai Adadi. Now, in the villages, he's visiting the villages, and the members of the village, so they point to Pesukim in the Torah. And in this case, Navi. And they turned to Rabbi Chanina and said, please help us understand Pshat in the Pesukim. One Pasuk says, Ksiv, Habayis Asher Banu HaMelech Shlomo LaHashem, Shishim Amah Arkav Esrim Rachbo V'Shloshim Amah Kamasa. So it says that the house that he built was a length of 60, a width of 20, and Shloshim Amah Kamasa, and it was 30 in height. So we have one description of the Bayis being 30 Amas high, which is good. That's what we said yesterday. It's what we're saying right now again, as we're quoting a pasuk in Malachim. On the other hand, in the very same perek in Malachim Aleph, describing Bayis Rishon, it says, it says regarding the area of the Devir, of the actual house itself, so it's 20 by 20 by 20. 20 amas tall. So it's simple discrepancy. In other words, you don't have to be that learned to realize that the psukim are contradicting one another. How tall, how high is Bayis Rishon? One pasuk indicates there's 30 amas, another pasuk indicates there's 20 amas. It's a very simple stira. And the members of the city of this little village, so when Rabbi Chanina comes to visit, so they point the psukim to him and they said, we need pshat. And they do. We need pshat. So amalahu ki kachash mitzvas kruvim lamala. So the Gemara says like this. Well, the pasuk was describing the height being 20 amos. That was not from the ground. From the ground, it would be 30 amos. But in other words, measuring from the kruvim, so it would be another 20 amos above that. So in other words, here's what we know. We know that there were two sets of kruvim in Bayis Rishon. One set of kruvim that was on top of the aron, so that was made by Moshe. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, when making the Mishkan, made an aron, and on top of the aron, so the Torah describes how there are kruvim that are made on top of the aron. So that's one set of kruvim. And then there's another set of kruvim. Shlomo HaMelech built kruvim. They were big, and they were placed on the ground in the Kodesh HaKadoshim next to the Aron. And we're going to be describing them in terms of both their height and their length, but they were, from the ground to the top of the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech, 10 amas tall. So you're talking about statues that were approximately 20 feet in the air. Okay, significant. So, and there are two of them. So when the pasuk in Malachim is describing the height, it's describing from the top of the kruvim until the ceiling. So my kamash wants, the Gemara says, okay, so good. So now Rabbi Chanina explains pshat in the pasukim and the discrepancy between 20 versus 30. That's very good. Now, what's the point? Meaning, okay, and so now the Torah is telling us, the Navi is telling us, that from the Kruvim until the roof was 20 amos. What's the, what do we gain from that? So, HaKamash Malala, Matika Lamala, Malamala, Ein Mishamish Klum, Af Lamata, Ein Mishamish Klum. So the Gemara says, it comes to teach us the following. Look, if I were to measure that space between the Kruvim and the roof, so it's 20 amos. 20 amos of what? Nothing. Nothing. Meaning, there's simply nothing there. So the Gemara is telling us is that if I were to measure from the 10 and below, so what's there? Also, nothing. Now, obviously, that's very difficult. What do you mean nothing's there? That's not true. What do you mean nothing's there? The Kruvim are there. And the Aron is there. So as the Rashman points out over here, and it will become a big part, and I'm sure you've heard this before, meaning that even though, yes, in terms of linear measurement, the Kruvim take up area, in terms of linear measurement, the Aron take up area, however, when placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they took up no area, meaning that they just simply didn't take up space. So, Aflamate Mishamish Klum, Misayil Rabbi Levi, and this actually is support for Rabbi Levi, Damar Rabbi Levi, Vitem Rabbi Yochanan, Davazem Mesoros Biadinim Avasenu. We have the following tradition, Makam Aron Kruvim Enom Inamida. The area of the Aron, the area of the Kruvim is Enom Inamida, is not counted towards the Mida, meaning that it just simply doesn't account for any of the measurements inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Meaning from end to end, the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 Amos by 20 Amos, right? Well, like we saw just a couple minutes ago. And yet, there's an Aron inside, and yet there are Kruvim inside, and they simply don't take up any of that area. Meaning the distance from the Aron to the wall, each side of the Aron to the wall is 10 Amos. Right? Now, how can that be? Meaning, if the distance from each side of the Aron to the wall is 10 Amos, so where's the actual Aron itself? Exactly. In other words, it doesn't account for, it doesn't take up space. And the same thing could be said by the Kruvim. And interestingly, the Rashbam over here says, the Kruvim we're talking about over here is the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech, meaning that just like the Aron ends up, now Aron was constructed by Moshe Rabbeinu, or, you know, the overseen by Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Aron, just like the Aron doesn't take up any space, the Kruvim that were made by Shlomo HaMelech also did not take up any space. Tayina Mehachi, the Gemara quotes of Bryce to support this as well. Aron Shasa Moshe, Yeshlo, Revach Ezer Amos, Chol Ruach Veruach. The Aron that was made by Moshe has 10 Amos of Revach, space between the Aron and the wall. So, as a result of that, so now, where's the Aron itself? And again, the total area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 by 20. So now, if I were to put the Aron in the center, and there were 10 Amos between each side of the Aron and the wall, so where's the Aron? So that's exactly the point. In other words, it doesn't take up space. Am Rabbanai, Am Shmuel, Kruvim, Ben Esai, Heina Omdim. And the same thing is regarded, it can be said regarding the Kruvim. Again, these are the Kruvim that were made by Shlomo HaMelech. So they were standing Ben Esai, they were a miracle. Meaning the fact of the matter is that they simply did not fill up the linear measurement that they were. They just b'nei sayomdim. Shenamar, and how do I know this? Because the Navi describing the Kruvim made by Shlomo HaMelech, v'chamesh amos kanafa kruva achas, v'chamesh amos kanafa kruva shenis. Each wing of each of the Kruvim is 5 amos. And let's assume that the wings are spread out, meaning the wings are going in 2 different directions. So that means that from end to end, each Kruv was at least 10 amos. That's just in the wingspan. And when I say wingspan over here, I mean that literally, meaning the wingspan. Ezer amos mikatzos kanafav v'ad kisos. So now it's 10 amos. Now, as the Rashbam points out over here, not going to go through the Rashbam inside, but that's 10 amos times 2, because there are 2 Kruvim. So now we have 10 amos times 2, that's 20 amos. So, and that's just the wingspan. And the Gemara says, Gufay Ohecha Havukaimei. So now the Gemara says, now we didn't even account for their body, meaning their body can't even fit. So the Gemara says exactly, El Shema Minah B'nei Sein Omdim. So it must be that they were there as a miracle. Meaning, that each...
Huh? They face each other.
Okay, good. So that
it would be 20, it'd still be 10.
Okay, good. So I like your visualization, but you, that's... And I'm saying this respectfully, but that's your visualization. Meaning, good. Right now, the Gemara is working with an assumption that that's not the way to visualize it. The way to visualize it is that they were... In other words, they went out.
The face is going to be the face.
Again, that's I know the Gemara coming up, by the way. So I'm just going to say this. That's your assumption going into this that they were facing.
They could still be facing.
Okay, fine.
Having to be.
In other words, right? All these assumptions of what it looked like are assumptions that we make because we have certain visualizations of what you know of what it looked like. Right now, you know, throw all the assumptions out. Meaning, right now, the Gemara is just simply assuming that right. In other words, their wingspans are going out and they're side by side, and there just can't be enough room for everything, for the four sets of wings, each one being five amas, and their body, and there just can't be room enough for everything. And the Gemara says, and good, and that brings us to the conclusion, which we've already hit now a number of times, and that is Menes Hayomdim, meaning that their linear measurement is just simply does not need an accounting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they measure 20 amas wingspan. You put them inside, and somehow it fits. Okay. All right. So the Gemara starts off with a series of questions, meaning that, and this is the Gemara true to form, meaning that we're not going to argue with the basic premise that B'nei Hayomdim, it's just that the Raya is not an absolute ironclad Raya. And what the Gemara is going to be doing now, 5-6 times over, is basically say, you know, we can configure the Kruvim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim where, even if every linear measurement is correct, it could fit. And again, the Gemara is just doing that to be argumentative against the Raya. It's not an ironclad Raya. And the Gemara says, Maskef la abai v'delma bolten katana golem havakaime. So, question number one. Number one is, you ever see the chickens where the wingspans don't account for the body because their bodies are just simply in front of the wings? Meaning, as the Rashi describes over here, that the wings are connected on the back, side by side. And as far as the body's concerned, the body's in front of the wingspan. So it could very well be that these Kruvim have a wingspan of 10 amos, and as far as their body is concerned, the body is just simply not part of that measurement. And so therefore, what we have over here is a total of 20 amos. Now, yes, it's true. Rashman points this out. Tosfos points this out. Yes, it's true. It's still going to be incredibly difficult to fit in the Kodesh HaKadoshim if it's a total of 20 amos, and the area inside is a total of 20 amos, meaning that's too perfect to fit. All the Gemara is doing is just simply challenging many of the assumptions going into the question. So the question, don't we have to account for the body between the two wingspans? Answer right now, no, we don't have to. Next. Maskev l'rava v'dumma zeshlo k'neged zayu kaimei. Another simple question, and that is, you assume that the Kruvim were side by side, meaning that when Shlomo HaMelech's Kruvim were placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they were lined up side by side. The Gemara says, not necessarily. In other words, what could very well have happened is that they were not in alignment with one another, and so therefore, one was against the wall, the other one was against the other wall, and they overlapped. Okay, that could very well be. Next, Maskev l'Ravacha bar Yaakov v'dilma b'lachson avakayma. Again, you're assuming that the Kruvim were placed either in a north-south alignment or an east-west alignment. Not necessarily. You put them in a diagonal, and so when the box is 20 by 20 and you have a diagonal, so the diagonal is going to add more space. Okay. Square root of 2. Times each one of the sides. Okay. Anyway, so Maskev l'Ravuna b'Reid Rav Yeshua v'Dilma Beisa Me'ila Ravach. Another point, the Gemara says, look, yes, it's true that Navi describes the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Bais Rishon to be 20 by 20 amas, but that could very well be as you're measuring by the top. But it could very well be that as the building moves down, as you're moving down towards the floor, it could be that the actual area inside gets wider and wider. And only as you get to the top is it narrowed to the point of 20 by 20. So who's to say necessarily that the base of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the base of Mikdash and Bais Rishon was 20 by 20 amos? Could have been bigger. The Gemara says, and also another consideration, which is that their wings were bent, meaning again the assumption going into this into the proposal of the Gemara, into the Raya of the Gemara, is that the wings were straight, and so therefore the total wingspan was 10 amas. Okay, but it could also very well be that the wings were bent, and so therefore maybe even though the wingspan itself is each wing is 5 amas, but bent over it's less than 5 amas. Or the Gemara says, and another thing which is that it could very well be that although the wingspans are the wings are not bent, but it could very very well be that the wings of each one of them interlock into the other. Meaning it doesn't necessarily have to be that when the wingspan of one ends, the other one begins. It could be that they interlocked one with another. The word shachufei, mishachafei, means interlocking. The Rashbam over here quotes Targum Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we know of Targum Onklus. I'm assuming he's referring to Targum Yerushalmi. I mean, the truth of the matter is I could have looked it up. I didn't. Okay, but anyway, the Targum Yerushalmi, when the Pasuk says that Yaakov was Sikel as Yadav, right? So the Targum over there, the Rashbam quotes, the Targum over there is from the same root of Mishachafei, meaning that what Yaakov Avinu did is he interlocked his arms. So over here, what the Gemara is assuming is that we could say the same thing over here, meaning that the Kruvim had their wings interlocking with one another, and again, that cuts into the linear measurement of a total of 20 Amos. Okay, and again, all the Gemara is doing in these last six hatkafas, these challenges, is basically, look, could be right, meaning B'nei Sayomdim, and they're not part of the linear measurement, but just don't, you don't have to assume that it was end-to-end wingspan, and therefore it must be. The Raya is not absolute. Ketzen Ein Omdim. Now, with that in mind, the Gemara continues to discuss a little bit more over here regarding the regarding the Kruvim. How do they face? So again, like I said a moment ago, every one of us has a certain visualization of what it looked like. So Ketzad Enomdim, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar. So Machlokes Amoraim, Charamar Peneim Isha Lachiv, Charamar Peneim Labayis. So one opinion is that they faced one another. The other opinion is that they faced the actual wall, the house. Ulaman Damar Peneim Isha Lachiv Haksiv, Peneim Labayis. Now the truth of the matter is, so Machlokes Amoraim, but it's also really a stira amongst the Psukim. Meaning if we look at the Psukim, you're going to see that Psukim would indicate otherwise. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, the Gemara quotes over here, is Peneim Labayis. The Kruvim faced the house. So, if you're of the opinion that they were Ish Elachiv, so what do you do with the Pasuk that says that they faced the house? Lokasha, Kam Bizman She Yisrael Osim Ritzono Shel Makom, Kam Bizman She'ein Yisrael Osim Ritzono Shel Makom. So, what is talking about when the Jewish people are doing Kadosh Baruch Hu's will, so then the Kruvim are facing one another. The Rashbam, that's how the Rashbam explains it. When the Bnei Yisrael are not doing the Ritzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then the Kruvim are facing the house. And it's a mashal, meaning that when we're doing Ritzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore the relationship is good. It's ki'ilu, it's like the couple who are happy with one another and are ready to face one another. Masha Ein Kein, if Bnei Yisrael are not doing Ritzon Shel Makom, so then they're not facing one another. It's said B'derech HaMashal. The Rashbam says, by the way, admittedly, the Psukim are really describing two sets of Kruvim, two different sets of Kruvim. Meaning the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, which we just quoted, is describing the Kruvim made by Shlomo HaMelech. The Pasuk, which we're going to quote in just a moment, from Parshas Truma, that's the description of the Kruvim that are made by Moshe Rabbeinu on top of the Aron. But the Rashbam says, that's true, but that's not a way to be Miyashi of the Psukim. Meaning we work with a general assumption that whatever is true by the Kruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu is also going to be true by the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech. So the Rashbam says, so even though different Kruvim being described, but we are going to assume that they are in the general, generally in the same position. Uleman Damar, continuing in the Gemara. Uleman Damar Panem Labayas, Aksiva Panem Ishalachiv. So the Gemara says, what about if you subscribe to the viewpoint that the Kruvim fundamentally face the house and not face one another, what do you do with the Pasuk and Truma? The Pasuk says, Upanem Ishalachiv, they face one another, the Kruvim. So the Gemara says, Dimitsadade Atzdude. So the Gemara says, well, in other words, we don't have to understand this in absolute. Meaning, they kind of faced each other, they kind of faced the house. It was at a diagonal. Ditanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Unklus Hager Amar. Unklus Hager, who lived during Baisheni. So what does that mean in terms of what he saw? I don't know. Just I'm throwing this out as a question. Meaning, we know there was no Aaron and Baisheni, so did he see Moshe Rabbeinu's Kruvim? Presumably not. And Shlomo HaMelech's Kruvim existed during Baisheni? I don't know. Okay, anyway, but so it could very well be that he just had this as a Kabbalah. So Unklus Hager Amar Kruvim Maisa Tzatzumahin. So they would look like children. Mitsudadim Pneim Ketamina Nifta Meirabo. And their general their general positioning. How do they face one another? Like a student leaving his Rebbe. Student leaving his Rebbe, so on one hand, you're walking the other direction. On the other hand, it's your Rebbe, so you don't want to turn your back to him. So basically, you move to the side. You angle off to the side so that you are, on one hand, not disrespecting him. On the other hand, you are walking away. So you're off to the side. So that's the same general position regarding the Kruvim. So they didn't face one another. They weren't against one another. They were off to the sides of one another. Okay.
Why is the Gemara trying to prove the linear measurement of the Kodesh Kadashim when the ark itself? The ark is a bigger problem.
Right. In other words, right. The Gemara just thought that the Kruvim, because we know what their wingspans are, so the Gemara thought that this is, such a good raya that you see that has to be Bnei Somdim, meaning there's no other way to explain it. And then the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not true. In other words, but there are other ways to explain it. Okay. Adkan. That takes us to the end of the. I saw the Rimi Gashkin being quoted. It's a good kasha. The our Gemara tells us that, at least according to one opinion, they faced each other. But only when doing Ritzon Hashem Makom, only when doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only when the Jewish people are doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when we're not doing Ritzon Hashem Makom, so they didn't face one another. So the Gemara in Yuma describes that when they came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, so they walked into the Kodesh HaKadosh, and what they see. So the Gemara in Yuma says that the Kruvim not only were faced one another, but they were embracing one another. So the Rishonim asked, Rimi Gash, I guess the first one who gets credit for asking this question, but the Rishonim asked, well, based on what we just learned in the Gemara, so not only should they not be, they certainly shouldn't be embracing one another, and they shouldn't be facing one another. If we're talking about Churban Beis HaMikdash, clearly the Jewish people are not doing Ritzon Hashem Makom, so how do you understand the Gemara over there in Yuma? So that's the question. A number of answers. The Rimi Gash gives a number of answers, a number of suggestions to that. Perhaps the one that resonates with me is that I like this answer. He says that the truth of the matter is that the Kruvim were not facing one another, but when the Umas Olam come in, so Kadosh Baruch Hu does not want to show that he's unhappy with us in front of the Umas Olam. So he has the Kruvim for the purposes of appearances. He has them facing one another, embracing one another in front of the Umas HaOlam, right? The Ki'ilu, it's like, you know, the parents are fighting, but you know when the children are there, so they don't fight. Okay, not in front of the children. So yes. Okay. All right. Anyway, that's he gives other answers as well. Okay. We start with the Mishnah. We are on Sadi Tetzam and Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud. Mishla Yeshla Bor Lifnim Beisho Chavera. Okay, so you have a pit, and in order to get to it, you have to walk through somebody's house. Like, how do we get here? So the Rashman points out, we could have gotten here a number of different ways. It could have been that it was a property that was being divided between brothers, and, you know, awkwardly, you get the house, but I get the pit, which is in the house. Okay, and it can happen other ways as well. Okay, in other words, there are ways in which we can get here. So that means that how do I get to my pit? I got to walk through your house. Okay, and again, in terms of access, it could be that you sold me the access. It could be we're holding like Rabbi Akiva, which is Ba'an Yafahu Mocher. However, we're here, which means that. And for me to get to my water source, I got to go through your house. So how do we do it? So the Mishnah says you do it with seichel. Okay? And the Mishnah teaches us over here some seichel. So number one, you can't come in at 11 o'clock at night. Okay, it's too late. 4 o'clock in the morning? No. Meaning the only time you could walk into somebody else's house, even though it's your pit and it's your water and you have by rights access to it, but you got to go in when people are there and people are up and basically daylight hours. Second point of seichel, it's like common sense, this Mishnah. And that is, don't bring your animal through the other person's house. Meaning, obviously, you're getting the water for your animal, so here's what you do. You bring a bowl, right? You get the water. You bring the water outside, but you don't bring your animal through somebody else's house. Okay, next. And the third point, says the Mishnah, is that we're going to work with the double lock system. Meaning, the owner of the pit is going to have some sort of door over the pit and a lock so that the owner of the house doesn't get access to that pit anytime he wants. But there's a second lock as well, second padlock on the door, on the entrance to the pit, and that's going to be by the owner of the house. To which the Gemara asks the obvious question. Meaning, on points 1 and 2 in the Mishnah, it's really seichel. Okay, good. So, in point number 3 of the Mishnah, the Gemara says, why the double lock? Poseches lehecham Rav Yochanan shnehem labor. Okay, so Rav Yochanan teaches us, and I know I said it already, but it's because I knew the Gemara coming up. So both padlocks are going to be for the pit. So the Gemara says, okay, Bishlam abalabor by lishta muramaida de bore. So the Gemara says, I get it. I get that the owner of the pit is going to want a padlock on his pit so that the owner of the home doesn't go to and take water from his pit. Gemara says, I got that. That's easy. Elabalabais lamale. But why does the owner of the house also need a padlock as well? Gemara gives a wonderful answer. It's great Musar. I'm a Rebbe Lazar. So the Gemara quotes, in the name of Rebbe Lazar, Mishum Chashad Ishto, because of the chashad of his wife. Rashbam, on the top of Tzadi Testament base. Avahashta deni ochelishov below balabayas lo yikanas l'sham negesh yavo balabayas. Right. In other words, if the owner of the pit knows that the only way he's ever going to have access to get to his pit is only if the owner of the house is there as well, so that means that the only time he's going to come over is only when the owner of the house is there. Had we not had this double padlock system, what would have happened is that he would have walked in while the owner of the house was away, while his wife was home, and chshad, and that would lead to suspicion. And it could lead to a lot more than suspicion. But even just by that alone, says the Gemara, that's not good. So in order to prevent from such an occurrence happening, so now you have the double padlock system, so now the only time that the Baal HaBor is going to come into the house is only when the Baal HaBayis is there as well. Okay. Mishnah. Mishieshlo gina lifnim miginaso shel chavero. So it's this Mishnah is similar to the previous Mishnah. I have a garden. My garden is tucked away in somebody else's house, in someone else's property. And again, how did we get here? Again, we say the same thing I said previously. Maybe it was a chalukah, maybe it was a division of an estate. However we got here. Doesn't really matter. We're here now. Where, in other words, in order for me to get to my garden is landlocked, and it's in your property, and I got to walk through your property to get to my garden. And again, let's assume that I have a path in order to get there. So, let's go point number one. Same point that we made in the previous Mishnah. And again, it falls under the category of Seichel. I can only go in during daylight hours when people are up and about. I cannot go to my garden, even though it's my garden. I can't go there 11 o'clock at night. Right, that's just it's not appropriate to be walking through your property that late at night. Next, the Eino Machnas Sosocho Tagarin, and also I can't bring my customers into the garden. Meaning, right? Unlike the previous mission, we were talking about water, so we're talking about bringing my animal through your property. Here, we're talking about my garden. So who am I going to want to bring in? Customers. So again, the Mishnah says, don't do that. Meaning, you want to, let's say you're growing, you're growing tomatoes in your garden. And you want to sell your tomatoes to customers. So what you do is you go into your garden, you pick the tomatoes, and you bring them out to your customers, but you don't bring your customers in. And also, don't use this as a passageway to get to somebody else's property. Meaning, if you want to use it to get to your garden, that's fine. But to use it as a shortcut, that you're not allowed to do. V'achitzon zareya es aderech. Now, this should sound familiar. We said this earlier in the Masechta, about 2 weeks ago. So, even though you have a pathway through someone else's field in order to get to your garden, your garden is landlocked, and you do have access to get there, and the outer courtyard or the outer garden, the owner gave you permission to walk through in order to get to your garden. All that's true. But whose property does that belong to? That pathway fundamentally still belongs to its owner. And if its owner wants, it can plant over there. Now, I know that's strange, because then how are you going to walk to your pathway if you have somebody planting over there? I'm not sure. That's That part's a little bit difficult. But the point the Mishnah is making is it's not your. You have rights to go through that pathway, but it's not yours. You do not have ownership to it, and that's what the Mishnah tells us. Hachitzon zareas aderech. Now, nasno lo derech min atzad. Now, this next part of the Mishnah explains the Rashbam. Goes as follows. We are now talking basically about an easement. Look, if we have now a division of an estate between two brothers, and they're not sure basically in terms of how the guy in the middle is going to get to his path, and they can't come up to some sort of amicable agreement. So what do? They go to Beis Din. And Beis Din says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to establish an easement, so that the person in the center has a way of getting to his pathway. So once Beis Din now has demanded this kind of easement, so now this is neutral ground, and we're going to treat it a little bit differently than we treated previously. So naslo derech min atzad mi dash nehem, and it was done on the consent of both of them, meaning Beis Din basically adjudicated and demanded that this is going to be a pathway for both. Nichnas b'shashu rotze v'yotze b'shashu rotze. Now that this is a more formal and official easement, so now, when can you walk down this path? Anytime you want. Umachnas v'socho tagarim. Can you use this pathway in order to bring customers in? The answer is yes, you can. V'lo yikanz mitoch l'toch sadeh acheres. You still can use it as a shortcut. Meaning the only way that this is going to be similar to the private pathway is that just like in the private pathway you have only usage of this pathway in order to get to your field, here too you only have rights of usage of this pathway to get to your field, but you cannot use this as a shortcut. Who can plant on this easement? The answer, of course, is neither. Meaning, because this is not a private pathway, this is now a Beis Din instituted easement for the two of them, and therefore both neither of them can plant on this pathway. Okay, I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmul. The Gemara now continues its discussion about basically one person having a landlocked property. In order to get to his landlocked property, he needs to get through somebody else's property. And now we're going to be discussing not only a pathway, but also a waterway as well. I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmul, Amas Beis Ashlachem, Ani Mochelach. So let's say the person in one field says to the other person, look, I'll allow you to build a canal through my property. I'll sell it to you. I'll sell you the rights to a canal through my property so that now you can have water running through my property in order to get to your property. So, no sin lo beiz amas l'socha, ve'ama mikan ve'ama mikan. L'agapel. So now, again, if the parameters are spelled out on the sale contract, so good. But otherwise, what's the default? The default says Rav Yehuda Mashmul, is that it's going to be two amas for the canal, and it's going to be an embankment of one ama on each side of the canal. Okay, so a total of four amas. Now, it is a little bit interesting over here, which is a simple point, and that is that how we describe a canal in the Gemara? It's called an ama. Do you know why a canal is called an ama? Because generally speaking, it was the width of an amma. And so it is interesting that our Gemara over here has the canal as being two ammas and then an additional amma on each side. So it's a little bit strange because that's our general assumption is that an amma is just an amma and not two ammas. So the truth of the matter is the Rashbam is sensitive to this issue, and the Rashbam points out that there's another way to read the Gemara. And that is, the Rashbam writes, I'll read this one inside. The first thing I have to do is just find it. Okay, it's the first Rashbam on the Gemara. I'm going to skip to the end of the Rashbam. Lishna Achrina. It's the first long line of the Rashbam. Lishna Achrina. Ama beis ashlachem anemochalach nosan lo shtei amos lesocha shel sada. So the two amas over here is not a reference to the canal. Meaning the canal is one ama, as it typically is. And the two amas over here, that's a description of the embankment. And then, lesakin agapam, ama mikan v'ama mikan. Oh, that's a good shot. So in other words, so the two amas are really not a description of the canal, but it's a description of the total embankment of which you're going to divide it. One am on one side, one am on the other side. B'shem Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar v'Ikar. And the Rashbam says, I like that pshat. He says, that's my preferred pshat in the Gemara. Okay. So, Either way, point is that so when you buy a canal running through someone else's property in order so that your field will be irrigated, so you are afforded, again, let's go with the Rashbam's preferred pshat, a canal of one amma plus an embankment on each side of one amma. Gemara continues. Let's say you're selling a canal, but it's not a canal for irrigation. The Rashbam describes it as a canal for watering your animals or for washing your clothing. Basically, you want water to go through someone else's field, but not for the purpose of irrigating an entire field. You don't need that much. So what are we talking about over here? It's going to be smaller. No saying lo ama achas lasocha v'chatzi ama mikan v'chatzi ama mikan lagapel. So the embankments are going to be half. Half an ama nishayid, a full ama total. V'osan agapayim mizor an. And over here, basically the same question that we dealt with in the Mishnah regarding the private pathway. Whose property is it? Meaning, I'm allowing you an embankment for your canal, and obviously it's there for the infrastructure of your canal. It provides integrity of your canal. But who is fundamentally the owner of that of those embankments? Gemara asks the question, the Gemara answers, but the Gemara debates. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Bal Hasade Zoran, Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Bal Hasade Notam. So the Gemara basically, there's no debate in terms of who owns the embankments. The owner of the field owns the embankments. In other words, he's providing the embankments for the canal owner so that it provides infrastructure for the canal. But in terms of the right to plant on it, the right to plant on it is given to the Bal Hasade, the owner of the field. What is open for debate is, however, what he can plant over there. One says that it could be zoreya, that's seeds, and the other one says that it could be notea, those are trees. Manda amar zoreya kosheke notim. It runs contrary to what I would have thought. Obviously, what I thought it was wrong. So the one who says that you can plant seeds is for sure of the opinion that you can plant trees. Umanda amar notam aval zoram lo. However, the one who says you can plant trees does not agree that you can plant seeds. Apparently, the Gemara's assumption is, the planting of seeds is more detrimental to that land area than the planting of trees. The trees and the roots... Yeah, that's what the Gemara assumes. Yeah. The tree and the roots will go down and really will not hurt the infrastructure of that area. However, if you're planting seeds over there, so that will spread and it will really hurt the integrity of that area. So the Gemara says, Aval Zoran lo chilchule mechalchule. So what's going to happen is that if you're allowed to plant seeds, so it's going to really hurt the integrity, and the whole purpose of that embankment is to provide support for the canal. The Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Amas Amayim Shekalu Agapeah Mitakna Meoso Sade Biyadush Lo Kalu Agapeah Ala Baoso Sade. Now, let's say the embankments do fall apart, and now the owner of the canal wants to build up the embankment again. Where does he get? Where can he get the dirt from in order to build the embankment? So the Gemara tells us that he can get the dirt from the owner of the field. To which the Gemara asks, really? So you want water? You want your water? You'll get your dirt for your water. Why are you taking dirt from my property to create an embankment for your canal and your water? So the Gemara says, yes, that's true, but at the origination of the transaction, when I go to you and propose, I'd like to buy a canal, and I'd like your ground to provide an embankment, included in that deal is that in the event that my embankment were to fall apart, so then I'd be able to take dirt from your field in order to provide for my embankment. Meaning, effectively, what the Gemara is saying is that the argument in of itself is a good one. The owner of the field can say to the owner of the canal, why should you get land from my field? It is a good tie-up, but says the Gemara that was the original deal. The original deal included in it. Now, either this is a tacit understanding, or it's an umdana, it's an anasahade, however you want to say it. Basically, it's understood that when you are selling a canal, you're also by rights providing the necessary dirt for the embankment in the event that the embankment were to collapse.
Okay.
He doesn't have to pay for it.
And right, correct, correct. And he doesn't have to provide the dirt for it.
What I'm saying is that the face of the dirt he's using.
Correct. Okay. Let's stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with a new Mishnah. The learning we do this morning should be for a continued refuah shlema for Amram ben Simcha. And the Zecha Nishmas, Malka Bas Yochanan, and Sarah Bas Yitzchak. Mayor Ben Mishala. Mayor Ben Mishala. Thank you. Ya dil to Rav Yadim.